keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for coming back to the show. Hopefully, we didn't scare you off on the last one because it was a great one. We got a bunch of awesome and crazy news stories tonight, and hopefully we can start breaking down this barrier of propaganda that's keeping everybody divided. And that's really one of our core functions here at the Anti-Media, is wading through all of this nonsense, all this bullshit, all of this propaganda that's being fed down to us to keep all of us poor people fighting each other. Meanwhile, these, you know, banksters, whatever you want to call them, you know, get away with the heist and pull the wool over everyone's eyes. That's what's going on. And so we're going to try to crack through that a little bit today. I'm joined by a couple awesome guests here in the studio tonight. I got Manny Aguilar, special guest from Los Angeles. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great. Been in town doing the Pride Parade, transgender, went back to Hollywood, came back, and fighting Alec. You know, obviously you guys know that they basically, a lot of people are anti-immigration, anti-this, anti-that, and stuff like that. And also had a big fundraiser on Saturday at Centro Cultural de la Raza on the 43, and then the Cuban thing on Sunday and stuff like that. So I was really glad to see, the young kids and a lot of people really motivated about what's happening and stuff like that. So nice to be here, Nick. Thank you.
Awesome, man. I'm also joined by Jake Anderson in the studio. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
Doing well. Glad to be here, especially with Manny in the studio. It's good to see you, buddy.
Thanks, Jake.
We're also joined by our co-host DB Schwartz from joining us now remotely from Minnesota, as far as I know. How are you doing tonight, DB?
What's up, DB?
Hey, doing good, Nick. I was a little busy. I thought I was going to be late, but I made it here on time. And hey, glad that Manny's in studio. It's glad you guys are good. You guys are connecting.
Yeah, we're having a real exchange of soul going on here.
Yeah, man, we had a nice dinner and having a couple beers, man. I mean, can't complain too much here.
Real beers, Modelo.
Now, before we go on, we're gonna cover some stories that we covered over the weekend and today on the Anti-Media. But first, I want to go into a couple things that Manny mentioned. First off, Alec. Alec is what's known as the American Legislative Exchange Council, and it's this group of more or less lobbyists that meet and make backroom deals with legislators. So people that represent your local state governments, people that are in Congress, et cetera, et cetera. They meet up with these people and they basically write the laws. So basically what you have is corporations and their lawyers and their lobbyists writing laws And then you got these legislators writing, you know, basically signing off on these laws that are written by corporations and stuff like that.
It's like TPP Junior.
Yeah, it's like a smaller version of the TPP. And it's been going on for quite a while here in the U.S. And they had their latest meeting here in San Diego. And so there was a bunch of protests and actions to oppose them. I went down to one of them. Manny was there for most of it. And, you know, there was a bunch of people out there, and it's good to see that people are starting to realize, you know, what's going on with ALEC. People are starting to question, okay, like, maybe it's not a good idea that our electoral system is, you know, our laws are being written by corporations and things like that. It's like, maybe that's not such a good idea. So people are finally starting to realize that. I mean, I think people have known that all along, but they probably just didn't know about ALEC and these other shady organizations that do these type of backdoor deals. So now that it's coming to light, it's great, because now people, once they find out about it, it's like, you're never going to support ALEC. You're never going to support a corporation writing your laws for your, you know, that you're going to have to abide by. I mean, that's just something that doesn't sound like a good deal for the average, you know, person. So there's ALEC, and then the other thing that was going on this weekend was, you know, here in San Diego was about the 43 students that are still missing down in Mexico. I just read a story today on The Guardian about how they're continuing the search for these kids, and they found like over 100 other bodies, and these other bodies have nothing to do with they aren't the 43 students that go missing. I mean, this is a whole nother separate set of mass graves that they're uncovering down in Mexico, man, and it just goes to show the amount of violence going on down there. It's pretty insane. It's not something that we're very used to dealing with, you know, at a domestic level here in the U.S. You know, it's not very often that you find a big mass grave and you know, the cops don't go and, you know, kidnap 43 people at a time. They kidnap one person at a time like they did with Sandra Bland, but we're going to get into that a little bit later. But it's important to keep an eye on what's going on down in Mexico. Manny, you want to add anything to this?
I just want to say that there's a lot of artists that came out here to support a lot of the bands and stuff like that. And, of course, a lot of people like Maria, Elena, that spoke up there. Brooke, which happens to be an independent journalist on both sides and stuff like that. She sat in the meetings of the San Quintin people. So I know that they trust her. I trust her 100% and stuff like that. So, and it was a beautiful thing. And it just and thank you a lot of people for supporting that and stuff like that.
So the struggle continues here in the U.S., down in Mexico, all around the world against oligarchy, against corruption, against, you know, oligarchy, which is, you know, basically what a lot of these countries are dealing with. In Mexico, you got a marriage between cartels and government. In the U.S., you got a marriage between corporations and government. All around the world, you pretty much see this pretty similar trend going on. And so people all around the world are struggling. Look at Greece. Spain, I mean, all around Europe, Africa, South America, Mexico, everywhere, man. It's a struggle. It's an eternal struggle. We've been dealing with it since, you know, civilization was invented. There's been oligarchy. And, you know, it's the people, the regular people, the working people always are getting the short end of the stick throughout history. And so it's always a constant fight, constant struggle. And, you know, hopefully with the internet and everything going on, we're going to start making a lot more progress in the near future. But until then, you know, all we can do is keep fighting and just try not to get discouraged from, you know, maybe what may be perceived as, you know, a really long time to get things to happen or to get things to change. Change doesn't come overnight, man. You don't get, and like, this is a very painfully obvious with Obama. It's like, everyone's like, yeah, let's vote for Obama. He's going to change everything. But like that stuff, just you can't just vote that stuff in. That's just not the way it works. The change comes. It's hard fought. It takes a long time. It's a struggle. But that the struggle is what makes, you know, that change that we end up getting even more, you know, flavorful. It's even more savory once we get it. You know what I mean?
Well, and Obama as much said that. In fact, I think he directly said that when he was inaugurated in his speech, which was a pretty awesome speech. He said, you know, I am not going to completely change everything. And no one's going to.
Exactly.
Well, I want to say about the Cuban Five, it was a perfect timing this Sunday, because one of the reports that I got at ALEC was from basically Dolores Huerta, which is the second in command, you know, the right-hand person of Cesar Chavez and the, you know, migrant movement and stuff like that. And it was the timing was great because, as people know out there, or at least I hope they know, is Cuba's got an embassy. The flag went up. She was at the ceremony. And so now we're continuing the fight for the Cuban Five and stuff like that. And then there was a saying, basically, about Castro saying, and I'll let Nick say that because he said it to me earlier.
What was it? Oh, Jake?
Yeah, but what Castro said.
Oh, Fidel Castro, yeah. In 1973, Fidel Castro said, when the U.S. elects a black president and there is a Latin American pope, the U.S. will come to see me. I mean, that's a kind of prescience that is almost unfathomable.
Whoa, dude.
Huh? What?
So, you know, we can't make... Here's
Are you being facetious, DB? Or was that a real...
No. That was just Keanu Reeves, sorry.
Oh. So, yes, facetious.
So, you know, one thing that we can't overlook here, man, is the situation that the Cuban people have been put through for the last, you know, since like the 50s and 60s. I mean, shit, we overthrew the Cuban government a long time ago, 100 years ago or so, under Teddy Roosevelt, I think it was.
Well, yeah, we smashed the Spanish Empire right there.
Yeah. So, you know, we set up a kind of a puppet, you know, government there for a long time. And then that's why Fidel Castro came into power, because he was fighting against the Western puppet government that was controlling Cuba and had an oligarchy in place and all that stuff. But here's the thing that I want to, you know, that shouldn't be overlooked here, is that for decades and decades and decades, we had an embargo on Cuba, man. And because their government had a different ideology, a different philosophy than ours, we decided to punish everybody in the country, including women, children, sick people, old people. They all felt the pain from the U.S. embargo. And the only reason that it was done was because they had a difference of opinion. Yeah, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and, you know, that was a really long time ago and all that stuff. And, you know, that had to do with the Russians and all that.
That was just to keep them from being invaded, though. What most people don't understand is that was Cuba's only real way to keep from us invading them, was to have Russian ICBMs right there. And really, I mean, if you look at it, when you're on an island nation and you don't have resources, communism probably makes more sense.
Yeah, and you know, just because they had a different ideology.
What are you, a commie?
I'm totally like a socialist for sure. Oh. Maslowian, you know?
Me too.
Nobody at this point should have to pay for necessities.
Absolutely. What, healthcare, education, these things should be free. The fact that they're not... you know,
yeah.
What are people thinking here? Like that's what I don't get. The friends of mine who have, $100,000. How can you sit there and accept that? You're going to spend the rest of your life in servitude.
Well, you guys know me. I don't subscribe to any political philosophy exclusively. But
agorism.
I believe in agorism. But yeah, that's the thing, man, is that like, because of their government had a slightly different ideology than ours, and keep in mind, I mean, it's still basically an oligarchy over there in Cuba. They got a ruling class and they got a bunch of poor people, just like every other country has. And so, you know, because of that, we punished everybody. And it's the same thing that they were doing to Iran for a really long, well, and they're still doing to Iran. The sanctions are still in place. The sanctions will be lifted when Iran can prove that it's doing, you know, abiding by the deal that was reached. But, you know, the problem with a lot of this U.S. policy is that we don't discriminate between military targets or government targets and, you know, just regular civilian targets. And Cuba's a perfect example, man. We, for decades, we punished everybody there. Iran, we punished everybody there. All these countries that we do these kind of things in, we're hurting everybody. We're not just hurting the government. We're not just hurting the corporations that are funding the government, like they claim they're doing in Russia right now. We're hurting everybody, dude. We're not
bringing them freedom, Nick. Damn it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. And yeah, we're bringing them democracy. Manny has a funny little story that he was confronted with over the weekend, right?
Yeah. Well,
so someone, you were wearing a Cuban hat, and someone went up to you and like, "What are you? Some kind of communist? What happened after that?"
Well, Nick and Jake, basically, you know, somebody called me a communist, and at the time I wasn't sure, until this lady has a habit of pointing. I'm talking to you, and I'm saying, oh my God, I'm the only one that's wearing a Cuban hat, cap and stuff like that. And she says, you don't understand why I'm against Cuba. I said, well, ma'am, go ahead, you know, educate me. She says, because they have no democracy over there and we do. Well, I said, well, if we have democracy, how come we don't have free education and free health? And then she said, okay, bye. And yeah. She said, see ya, you know?
Her head exploded, I think.
Yeah, the argument was just so thin, paper thin. Because, you know, the funny thing is like, well, I don't like Cuba because they don't have democracy, but I love America. It's like, well, I'm sorry to break the story to you, but America's not a democracy either. We're an oligarchy, and that's just a fact of life. And that kind of leads us right into this first story here. Because everybody's favorite Democrat, which goes by the name of Hillary Clinton, turns out she's an oligarch as well. And I'm sure anyone that follows us pretty closely, we reported Najee Dahi, one of our awesome journalists, did a report on the fact that Hillary Clinton's being bankrolled. Her number one bundler right now is Citigroup, which is, you know, Citibank, you know, Wall Street, you know, big bank. And some of the top five biggest banks are basically channeling money to Hillary Clinton right now. So that was bad enough as it is. But Jake wrote an article that we posted today that to me is even, in some ways, even worse. But basically, the title of the article is Darling of the Drug War, Hillary Clinton Campaign Funded by Private Prison Lobby. Jake, can you tell us a little more about Hillary Clinton's ties to these prisons?
Yeah. So her top campaign donors are the two biggest private prison contractors in the world, and those would be Corrections Corporation of America and the GEO Group. Her bundlers, and for people who don't know what a bundler is kind of like a super lobbyist, basically. They get, you know, they get people, the Hillary campaign, they call their bundlers hill raisers. Very charming. But these are lobbyists that are tied to lobbying corporations. And the one that Hillary uses is called Aiken, Gump, Strauss, Hauer, and Feld. Say that one five times fast. And so they are garnering $240,000 from Corrections Corporation of America, and they're getting about $50,000 or something from the GEO Group. Worth pointing out, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio are using the same firm, Aiken, Gump, Strauer, Hauer, and Field. So I don't know, you know, I guess maybe there's also a monopoly in lobbying corporations. I don't know. It's kind of creepy to me that, but yeah, you know, whatever Hillary Clinton wants to pontificate about civil justice, and, you know, at one point she was a, you know, an ambitious young lawyer who had ideas about criminal justice. But that
was a really, really long time ago.
And since then she has capitulated to the death penalty. She lends it her quote-unquote unenthusiastic support to the death penalty. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, she now apparently has no problem having her campaign bankrolled by two groups that have single-handedly doubled the prison population between the years of 2000 and 2010. This is extremely problematic. I would challenge anyone who supports Hillary Clinton to take a look at this and take a look at yourself and ask yourself whether you think that you can support a candidate who supports essentially a cycle of the drug war, creating a generational cycle of incarceration based upon arbitrary legislation.
Exactly, man. And now here's one thing that can't be missed with this story here, and its tie into the drug war. Because if you look at these same private prisons that are funding Hillary Clinton, Marco Rubio, and Jeb Bush, so
right.
let's keep in mind, now the private prisons have a monopoly over the electoral system.
Right.
No matter which dog wins, and you know the guy that I think is going to go is Rubio, I've said it a million times, no matter who wins, doesn't matter if it's Rubio, Bush, or Clinton, they're all in one way or another bankrolled by the private prison lobby. And then we got to look at what the kind of legislation that the prison lobby gets behind. Well, dude, this is the drug war. This is drug war 101. The prison lobby is one of it's in the top five lobbying groups that pushes for harsher and harsher drug sentencing, drug penalties, you know, three strike laws, these kind of things, these horrible, horrible pieces of legislation where, you know, they're incriminating victimless people that commit victimless acts, they're incriminating them.
Even Hillary has walked back the three strikes law. I mean, Bill has walked it back. I mean, and this was a mistake. They knew it was a mistake. You know, they spearheaded this bullshit drug war. They kept it going, and they're criminals.
So by default, what seeing this money coming in from the prisons, by default, that kind of goes to tell you, okay, well, these guys are banking on the fact that these candidates are going to continue the drug war. You know, and so that basically tells you Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush, and Marco Rubio, just to name a few. I'm sure the rest of them probably, especially all the Republicans and stuff, they're probably all for the drug war too.
Bernie Sanders
and Rand Paul are probably the two that actually have spoken out against the drug war and stuff. And for that, I applaud them, even though I don't think that electing them is going to fix anything. But, you know, these guys are banking on these people continuing the drug war. And you follow the money, you look at historically looking, I mean, people, the money that they accept, that's the agenda they follow. They don't follow what we want them to do. Everybody that supports Hillary is like, oh, Hillary's awesome progressive. She's a civil libertarian. She's going to, you know, end injustice, and she's going to roll back a bunch of these horrible things. Well, no, dude, she's not. She's being bankrolled by the same fools that Jeb Bush is, so get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear anybody saying that Hillary Clinton's going to do anything that isn't outside of the political establishment norm, you know, and that's exactly what she's going to do if she does get elected, which I don't think she will. But if she does, I mean, she's going to carry on the same shit that Bush did, the same shit Obama did, the same shit that her husband did, and then it's going to be her, and it's just the next puppet in line, and that's pretty much end of story for Hillary Clinton. She's no different than any of these other candidates.
Well, I've been busy being an activist, so I don't pay too much attention to the politicians, and obviously, I said to myself, if Ted Cruz won, he'd be deporting me tomorrow and stuff. And so he's one of the most dangerous Latinos I've seen run for office. Now, I was shocked to see that there's actually 16 players that are running in the Republican Party. I didn't know, man, that's a lot. 16 players and stuff like that.
Hey, at least we have 16 choices, right?
Yeah.
Even though we actually only have like one.
That. But one of the paintings that one of the artists drew down there for the, you know, 43 and stuff like that, had Donald Trump saying, I just love Mexicans and stuff like that. So that just kind of, I cracked up about that, you know?
Yeah, we can't forget about...
I'm sure it's very sincere.
We can't forget about the Donald Trump candidacy.
Isn't Trump suing Univision?
Actually, he really is and stuff like that, you know? And so, but it's just one of the things about Trump, you know, DB, that really shocked the Latinos. We were talking about it this weekend, is... When Trump went after the Mexicans, everything was cool with the GOP. But as soon as they went after McCain, the GOP said, "Whoa, you just stepped out of line."
Hey, don't jeopardize our military industrial complex, there, buddy. You can divide people up with the whole, "Hey, we got to blame Mexicans for our problems." You know, fine, that's cool. That's what the establishment wants. We don't want you making a fool out of our war heroes, though.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man. The Trump candidacy, dude, it's such a joke. He's got no chance in winning. It's funny. The Huffington Post won't even cover them in politics anymore. He's now considered a gossip column, and that's pretty funny. And but that's more or less what he is. I mean, the guy is just inflammatory and inflating his own image and his own popularity. But the scary thing, and like I don't like talking about Trump because he is a joke, but what scares me is that there's a lot of real-life hate coming from his supporters, man, and people are like, yeah, think that he's actually telling the truth, man. I mean, well, Donald Trump is a conspiracy theorist, man. Everything that he's said about Mexicans, it's all been a lie, dude. He's just
conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, calling him a conspiracy theorist would be giving him too much credit.
Too much credit.
Donald Trump is a liar, and he's saying
he's a racist and cap that
he's pandering to conservative white people that are. In one way, they're rightfully concerned about their economic situation because, yeah, the economy is not what it once was, and it probably never will be what it was ever again. But what Trump is doing, and it, why it plays into this whole national agenda here, is that Trump is providing a lot of convenient deflection for valid criticisms of the system and the monetary system, the economic system, the TPP, NAFTA, and all this stuff that could be criticized about why we have a, why our economy is so messed up, the Federal Reserve and all this stuff. This is stuff that we should be talking about. Instead, he lies and he blames it on Mexican people, even though the facts just don't line up with what he says. Like, everything that he said about Mexican people has been a lie. Saying that they're all that they're all rapists and that they're all criminals. I mean, looking at the stats, people that are immigrants have less crime than the people that are, you know, people that are born in the USA. And as far as the economy, blaming it like, oh, well, the reason our economy is messed up is because of people coming out from Mexico taking our jobs and stuff. Well, that's a lie as well. Man. Looking at the numbers, immigrants coming in, whether they're undocumented or not, immigrants coming into your country is a boost to your economy by almost every measurement. In fact, I mean, all these countries, like in Russia, in Japan, in many places in Europe, they're dealing with a deflating population, and it's ruining their economy. Therefore, they're trying to get people, they're trying to give people incentive to have more kids. They're trying to give immigrants incentive to move into these countries. And Donald, you have Donald Trump over here trying to blame our problems on immigrants when immigrants are actually helping our economy, making it better. And these are just the facts, man. These aren't opinions. This is, if you look at the actual numbers, you know, this is what's really going on. But it's so convenient with all these people that are misinformed that watch Fox News. They don't have a effing clue about what's actually going on in the world. They just know that my paycheck is shrinking, my mortgage is underwater, my job isn't very secure, I don't know what I'm going to do when I retire. So, well, this guy goes on TV and says, well, it's a Mexican fault. Well, they believe it because people don't have the access, they're not accessing the real information. Thankfully, people that are listening to the show tonight are listening to us, and we're trying to present a rather, like, you know, real perspective on what's actually going on around. We're not trying to blame anybody. You know, we're not trying to provide a scapegoat or a straw man and say, oh, well, the real problem is that there's all these immigrants coming in stealing our jobs. No, dude, the real problem is that these bureaucrats are mismanaging our economy. They got horrible foreign policy. The Federal Reserve has been manipulating our currency. I mean, we want to get down to the real roots of these problems, man. And when we, when, if you look in history, man, look back at Nazi Germany when they blamed everything on the Jews. Do you think the Jews actually were, you know, responsible for Germany's downfall? No, dude. Germany, the reason Germany was so messed up after World War I were these horrible, horrible sanctions, horrible mismanaged economy. Everybody's familiar with the Weimar Republic and their hyperinflation. Man, there's pictures of people carrying wheelbarrows of cash down to the bakery to get a loaf of bread, and the baker goes, hey, you can keep the cash, give me your wheelbarrow, it's worth more, you know. And that's what, you know, and then Hitler was able to take that horrible scenario that was caused by bureaucrats, it was caused by imperialism, it was caused by war, and then he was able to simply make a scapegoat and say, you know what, it's just the Jews' fault. That's the problem. This rhetoric that Hitler used against the Jews, it's the same exact shit that Trump is using against Mexican people. And shit, 26% of the Republicans are buying into this shit. That is what scares me. I don't give a shit about Trump. Trump's an idiot. He's never going to get elected. 26% of Republicans are buying into this shit, and that's the big problem here.
And you know, Nick, on top of that, all this immigration, they're making money off the refugees that the judge just basically told them to release the refugees, you know, when we did the Murrieta thing. And they're locking up Mexicans and Central Americans and making money off it. So I don't know what Trump is talking about. So one of the things I want Trump to do is move to Minnesota.
Hey, thanks a lot, Manny. Hey, we'll take him. We'll stuff him up here by the border and see what he can do.
I don't remember the union, or particularly southern states, complaining about undocumented workers when we were shipping Africans across the ocean for slavery as well.
Well, he's a direct benefit of that, isn't he?
Right. Well, yeah. It's a bit of a historical point there, but the country typically has not had a problem with undocumented workers as long as we can exploit them in as much as possible.
Go back. Anyone want to go? We did an epic takedown of Trump. I don't want to spend any more time on this joker.
Seriously.
But we did a takedown of him a couple of weeks ago, and we debunked all of his fallacies and all of his bullshit lies. And that's all he is he's full of shit.
Since we have so much talent on air right now, can we all kind of come to an agreement of what the fuck happened with Sandra Bland?
Yeah, we were gonna get
yeah,
into
man.
That.
We're gonna yeah, we're gonna get into that right after this. We're gonna bring up the Sandra Bland stuff. First, I want to go into while we're on this immigration topic, there is a a lot of people don't know this, but women and children are being mass detained right now at the border because there's a bunch of refugees coming up from Central America because of the drug war and because of a lot of political and economic uncertainty going on in Central America, much of it caused by the Monroe Doctrine, U.S. policies, like I mentioned, the drug war. And so they're basically mass incarcerating women and children down at the in these border places. I'm sure they probably have one here in San Diego, in Otay or something. And they have them all over Texas, Arizona. But the conditions there are like really horrible. They're just jamming people into these converted warehouses. Many people have said, okay, this is what basically these FEMA camps are going to look like. And this is more like, you know, kind of a dry run for the FEMA camps and stuff. But I don't want to get too far into that. But a judge recently ruled that it was what they're doing is illegal by detaining all these people, and you know, mass incarcerating them. And these are children, dude. What are we doing throwing children into prisons, converted warehouse prisons? It's crazy. And these people,
cheap labor.
I mean, yeah, it could be. And these people haven't committed any crimes, dude. They're refugees fleeing from scenario that unfortunately is partly caused by the U.S. and partly caused by other factors. But fortunately, there was a judge that made a rational ruling and said, okay, you know what? We can't keep detaining these children and women in these detention facilities. And so it's expected that the people should be released within about 90 days or so. So that's some good news. We're no longer going to be mass incarcerating children and women that are fleeing horrible conflict in their home countries. And hopefully they can come and find their families up here and get their, you know, continue their life. And I, for one, welcome them in. Honestly, I prefer them to these 26% of Republicans that believe in Donald Trump. These people are idiots. And the people that are coming up here, the migrants are coming up here to work, and they're coming up here to participate. And that's...
Give them an acre.
Yeah, dude, that's what I say, man.
Mi casa es tu casa.
Give them an acre and watch what happens to GMOs.
So, coming off the heels of this Hillary thing, we find out she's bankrolled by the prisons. That brings us all the way down to this issue with Sandra Bland, which is the woman that was arrested down in Texas and thrown in jail, and then she was found dead. There's a huge debate going on the internet right now whether, you know, she actually took her own life, or if she was killed, or if there's foul play involved, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to get into our own opinions on this next. Anybody that wants to join the call and let us know what you think about Sandra Bland, what happened with her, feel free to give us a call, 718-717-8296. Once again, it's 718-717-8296. We'll get to your call once we get through all of our hosts and what we think about it. First, I'm going to open it up with Jake. Because me and Jake were talking about this before the show, and he's got some ideas on what's going on with Sandra Bland. So go ahead, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a complex issue. I mean, I think Nick. I mean, I don't want to jump on your theory, but I actually think it is probably the most accurate one, which is that. And I'll let you expand on it more on your go, but I think. The core point is that regardless of what happened after she was in prison, the original arrest by the cop, multiple legal scholars have advocated for the fact that it was an unjust arrest. She should never have been arrested. You cannot be arrested for a change of turn signal. She was not resisting arrest. Absurd pundit for Fox News claimed that she, you know, was using the cigarette as a weapon, which we all know is...
She was armed with a deadly cigarette.
She was armed with a deadly cigarette, yes.
Now, that cigarette was probably more harmful to her health than it was to the cops.
We should bring in a tobacco...
Dude, what kind of wussies are we hiring as cops?
Yeah, and this guy was just a straight-up, an agonist or an antagonist, and he caught, like, you know, and he caused everything that happened, and you could hear her off camera saying, "You're hurting my wrist. You slammed my head into the ground." She could have had a brain injury that caused a seizure that caused her to die. That then caused the cover up. She could have had a seizure that caused her to want to kill herself. The arrest is what caused everything. So at the very least, we have criminal negligence and manslaughter from that county. Now, once she got into prison, we just don't know yet. We don't have the evidence. The tape shows nothing happening in front of her prison cell. That could have been doctored. We don't know. There's video surfacing of her having a car accident prior to the arrest that shows her very emotional and... You know, it's all hearsay at this point. We don't know. What we do know is that it was an unjust, illegal arrest, and that cop should face hell. And that's what we know at this point. That's my take on it, is that these cops have got to, I mean, by whatever means necessary, these cops that think that they can do this crap to people have to be taken down.
That's right. They're not above the law.
And Texas is renowned for... You know, I had a friend that lived there, African-American friend, and he said, you know, it's well known, it's DWB down here. I mean, the cops pull him over and they give him hell, and they give him shit because they know there's not going to be a judge that sides with him.
Right. Yeah, man, definitely. So, DB, you want to go next here? What do you think about the whole Sandra Bland scenario?
I just know that the autopsy was supposed to prove conclusively she did to herself, but... I don't know about you, but I don't know any hefty bags that can hold a body weight, and I think that's just complete bullshit.
No way, and just let me chime in for just one quick second, DB. I read the entire police report the coroner's report of her injuries, and from what I've gathered from people who assessed it, who are actually medical experts, they say that there were not injuries consistent, the kind of injuries that you would get from hanging yourself, the kind of breakage, the cartilage tear, were not consistent with suicide. So that I just want to...
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yep. I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. It looked like some MMA move was probably used on her. Maybe she was belligerent in the cell or whatever, and they took it to that level, and then they put her up.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, and there's a lot of people that feel that way. Online, I've seen a lot of outcry. People think that there's foul play involved, and I definitely don't want to put that out of the equation, and we all know...
She was not depressed. Let's put it that way. Her own mother... played a voicemail she left for her like a day or two before. She was super excited to come see her. She was an activist. Everybody get that in your mind. She was an activist.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what these cops do. They push you over the edge. And I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that she killed herself. The bigger point is, and Nick is going to make this, you know, more eloquently than I will say, because this is his theory, which is that it doesn't matter what happened in the prison cell, that the arrest was unjust, the arrest caused the death, and that cop is responsible for her death.
Yeah.
Well, it's an act.
Manny, go ahead, man. What do you think about this?
As an activist, there's no doubt that she was targeted just for that, from the beginning. That's what that cop was mad.
Yeah.
She was against, actually, when I looked at the whole picture, she was against police brutality.
Yeah, she was a police brutality activist. That cannot be overlooked.
Exactly.
So, just like the guy that was killed in the church in South Carolina. I mean, all these police activists, whether they be in government or they're just activists like you, Manny, I mean, you guys have a target on you right now.
All the time. Sometimes my sister says, I'm going to make sure you're not dead already, and it kind of shakes me up a little bit, but that's a different story, you know? But she was happy to move to Texas, start a new job as an activist, and all of a sudden, this cop that for some reason, thinks he's above the law, took matters into his own hands and stuff like that. Now, I'm still kind of looking at the whole picture because I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I've heard some people that I know personally that have said that it looks like her pictures she's already deceased, basically, you know? So.
Yeah, man. And all I can really add to what Manny said, dude, is that, and what DB said as well, is that we know that the cops, when they make reports, they almost always try to make it out like they were the hero and that the other person was the aggressor. The person that gets killed, the person that gets shot, the person that winds up dead, the person that gets beat up, tased, whatever. Every time it happens, the police report is going to say, yeah, the cop was a hero and the guy that did it was an asshole. And that's just the end of the story. And then, you know, we've seen it with Mike Brown. We've seen it with Eric Garner. Thankfully, the video came out. We've seen it with the guy that got shot in the back down in, was it North Carolina? Mm-hmm. The guy that got shot in the back, yeah, in South Carolina. And then the cop went and planted a taser on him and act like he tried to steal his taser and all this stuff. The cops are always, the police report is never going to incriminate the cop. The cop is writing the police report. You think he's going to incriminate himself and throw himself behind bars?
Right.
No, dude. So you always, no matter what, even if Sandra, even if we come to find out later on that, okay, it was a legitimate suicide and, you know, everyone was jumping to conclusions prematurely, that doesn't matter. From the track record that the cops have, we have to question the story no matter what, because they're known for lying, they're known for bending the truth, mm-hmm. and making themselves out to be a hero no matter what.
And more importantly, Nick, your point, dude.
So the point I want to get to, and Jake hinted at it a little earlier, man, is that, like, looking at the video from my perspective, I looked at it, and, you know, she pulled over for what, having a broken taillight or some shit like that?
No, a turn signal.
No turn signal. And, you know, from what I could see, you know, a turn signal is not an arrestable offense.
No, it is
You
not.
Get your ticket and you're on your way. You know what I mean?
Legal scholars
this cop,
maintain that.
Exactly. And this cop went about arresting her in completely the wrong way.
Well, he said that she ran a stop sign, but it was just a rolling stop, like anybody else does everywhere.
Yep.
Look it up, because on his report he said she aggressively ran a stop sign. But on his own dash cam, it's just a rolling stop.
Well, if it was an aggressive stop sign running, well, I guess that justifies her dying, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, but you know how it goes, Nick. He's going to say, well, she could have been running from me.
Yeah, exactly. And
I didn't
know
that was
part of it. This is the whole thing, man. Running a stop sign, not using your turn signal. I mean, these are maybe, you know, justifiable to get a ticket. But the guy's reaction, dude, he goes up there and he's like, oh, here's this woman and she's black. Oh, she wants to talk, you know, assert her rights to me.
Yeah.
No, this just doesn't fly where I'm, you know, from, you know, this cop just was just like, no, I'm going to, you know, make an example out of this. And I know firsthand, man, I'm not a black woman. I'm a brown guy. But I've dealt with this same type of stuff from cops when I try to flex my rights. They get offended and they try to provoke you into some kind of confrontation. And I got it at the Border Patrol checkpoint up a couple miles north of here, up in Orange County, between San Diego and Orange County, there's a checkpoint. Four years ago, this happened to me, man. And I got pulled into the secondary inspection. I asserted my rights and I refused consenting. You know, I didn't let them search my car. And then the cop tried to start a fight with me, man. The Border Patrol guy, literally, because I was telling him, like, look, man, I'm not going to let you guys search my car because I know my rights, he took offense to it. And then he literally got in my face. He jammed his finger into my chest, pointing at me. And he's like, I'm sick and tired of immature individuals trying to tell me how to do my job. You know, and I've been doing this for 15 years. I know what I'm doing. Like, these are how a lot of these cops act this way, man. And just because
15 years, I'd hope you know your shit, but you don't.
Exactly. You'd think you'd know the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, but you don't, dude. But so that's the thing, man, is like just by asserting your rights. And like, I've had people like, well, if you know your rights, you got nothing to worry about. Well, no, dude, if you know your rights, sometimes you're in more danger, because the cops, when they see you trying to assert your rights, they get really defensive and they get really aggressive, just like the cop did to me. If it weren't for his partner coming up and physically grabbing the cop and yanking him back from hitting me, the guy would have swung at me, you know. And I'm not even I'm not a black woman that's like horribly oppressed by the cops. I'm a dude, you know what I mean? It's like they expect the dudes to do that stuff. When a woman tries to flex her rights against an officer,
and she's trying to,
they take serious offense to it. Yeah, the deadly cigarette. Really,
deadly
cigarette. I'm sure that's why he did what he did. But from what I saw, the guy just, you know, he just overreacted. He's like, oh, I can't take this woman, you know, standing up to me and, you know, trying to tell me,
hey,
job, I'm going to teach her a lesson, you know. And this is what was probably going through this guy's twisted ass brain.
Exactly.
The officer said he was afraid of getting secondhand smoke, all right?
Wow, dude. I mean,
No, really. He didn't say that, right?
Was she, maybe she was aggressively smoking that cigarette and, you know. Yeah.
She blew smoke in his mouth and he got kind of excited and he pulled his gun.
Oh, man.
I shouldn't even be laughing at this. It's just such an atrocious.
So, you know, as Jake was mentioning, man, my argument that I've been making, it to me, like, I haven't gone down the rabbit hole with the whether she was killed and it was made to look like a suicide or not. To me, it's like, in the end, she should have never been in jail in the first place. She ran a stop sign and she didn't use her turn signal. Okay, give her a damn ticket and she's on her way. You know what I mean? That's bad enough. I mean, getting tickets for arbitrary things like that when nobody was run over when she was going through the stop sign. I mean, it was a victimless crime.
And I think I have to think, Nick, that it's in some twisted way the cops almost think, you know what, this certain individual is not going to be able to get a lawyer. I have nothing to worry about in court. I'll just show up and the judge will side with me. If she even goes to court, and a lot of the ways, I'm just going to get off scot-free and nothing will happen to me.
Oh, exactly. The cops take advantage of the economic situation that most of minorities are pretty much trapped in. And so that's why they get away with, you know, bullying black people, bullying brown people all the time, because unfortunately, those people are also the most economically depressed people, and they don't have the money like your average middle class white person does to actually hire a lawyer and get, you know, get a DUI pushed down to a wet and reckless. So they get away with a lot more stuff. And, you know, and when it comes down to it, it's just a matter of being poor. It doesn't matter what race you are, what color you are. If you're of the poor class, if you're working class and you get victimized by the cops, guess what? You're pretty much helpless to fight back. You get a public defender that tells you, okay, just plead guilty, bro. You guys ever had a public defender? I've had a public defender and they told me, no, dude, just trust me. Just plead guilty.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything will be okay. And I was in for a marijuana charge one time. I had my med card in California. You know, you can do that kind of thing. And the public defender tried to get me to plead guilty to marijuana possession. I was like, no, I got a med card. I had that stuff legally. They're like, no, you should still plead guilty. I'm like, no, hell no, I'm not pleading guilty. I'm fighting it. And they're like, reluctantly, my public defender, okay, well, I'll talk to the DA and we'll see if we'll let you get away with it. And then sure enough, she comes back. Yeah, they dropped the marijuana charges. You know what I mean? But they tried to get me to plead guilty to. And this is what these public defenders do. And there are like very few. There are some good public defenders out there. Don't get me wrong. There's a few ones. And the good ones, we covered it a while back on the anti-media. There was a public defender that was really helping out one of the people that they were defending. And the public defender ended up getting arrested.
Well,
because unjust arrest happened in the courthouse. Go ahead, DB. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, you know, from my own research of why our laws are the way they are, and they're essentially the British system, you know, the bar is the British system that everybody's still, you know, holding sway to, and everything's got a fine attached to it, everything. You know, if you go to prison for murder, you still have like $1 million fine or whatever, and they know you won't pay it, and then you claim bankruptcy, and you have a trust somewhere attached to your social security number that pays your fine. It's a crazy-ass system. It's based on maritime law. If anybody ever gets into research about it, we're in maritime law still because we're still officially a colony. It's crazy.
Well, that's the thing. When you go to the courthouses, you're right, man. The flags and stuff, they have the tassels on them. And then everything inside of the courthouses is maritime traditional type of stuff. You know, the flags and the decorations. And, yeah, the courts, the American courts, are basically based on maritime law.
We didn't win in 1776. We more sort of had, like, this permanent armistice that in 1812 finally broke. And then I guess we lost and we allowed the banks back in, and that's when we went to this crazy fiat crap that we're in now.
Yeah, man. A lot of people don't know that history, man. The War of 1812, and it changed a lot of things in the U.S. And let's not even try to utopianize the founding fathers and the whole 1776, the revolution, all that. Shit, that was flawed from the gate. I mean, half the damn founding fathers were slave owners.
Remember, we had 7 presidents before Washington, all that served one-year terms. Not very many people know that, and they were all slave owners, all of them.
And, you know, the thing is that even as Washington, you know, even when the country was actually set up, it was only several years. I mean, I think Washington was still in his first term when they had the whiskey rebellion, when they tried to levy taxes against the whiskey, you know, distillers. And then they had to, you know, go crush an internal rebellion. That was within like 5 years of the country being founded, and the tyranny was already starting. So let's not try to sit here and act like, oh, that founding fathers had it right and they were perfect and this, that, and the other. No, man, they were flawed from the gate. Yeah, they had some good ideas.
But Nick, America.
Oh yeah, freedom, democracy. I mean, they were right in the pursuit of life, liberty, and the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Man, that's a great slogan. Those are great basic ideas to build on.
That's the Magna Carta, though. It's nothing new. It's just they finally had the guns to enforce it against royalty.
I think we should celebrate it simply because it was the very first marketing campaign.
Great.
It was the first PR. You're totally right, Jake.
That brings us to our next story here by one of our awesome journalists at the Anti-Media. Claire wrote this one today. But it's about the cost of police brutality. And so we're talking about Sandra Bland's family. You know, they're probably going to end up suing whatever county they're in Texas, wherever it happened. They're probably going to get sued for a bunch of money for wrongful death because
that's the best.
But, you know, even if they find out, yeah, she did commit suicide, even if that's the case, you know, they're still going to be able to sue the officer for wrongful death because he never should have arrested her. So they're going to win a couple million dollars lawsuit or whatever. And of course, that doesn't help anything. It doesn't bring back Sandra Bland. It doesn't fix the situation. It doesn't end the police state. It doesn't end institutionalized racism or anything like that. But here's a number that's crazy. And this is on the Anti-Media. You should be able to find it on the front page. In the last 5 years alone, the cost to the U.S. taxpayer of police brutality, $1.02 billion. In 5 years. That's what it's cost through all the lawsuits. And keep in mind, the NYPD gets, what is it, like a lawsuit's waged against them once every 10 minutes or some shit, crazy shit like that? Or was it 10 a day or something like that?
That's what you're paying. That's coming out of your pocket.
$1.2 billion. Your pockets, my pockets, our pockets, to pay for these cops beating the shit out of people and killing people in the streets because they're committing so many wrongful beatings, wrongful acts of violence, wrongful shootings, wrongful deaths,
yeah,
that it's cost $1 billion to pay the families back to compensate for the loss of life and the loss of, you know, property and health and time. And you know, when you get beat up by a cop and you're in the hospital for a month, that costs, you know, that could ruin your life in the short term. You know
this
what I mean?
A five-year sum.
Yeah, 5 years only, dude.
And it's so, dollars, not pesos.
Yeah, in dollar. So this is big, dude. I mean, this just goes to show you the extent of the police state, man. It's not something to, you know, oh yeah, there's a few police that do a few bad things. They're not all bad, dude. It's $1 billion coming out of your pocket. I think it's about time that even the people that aren't being stereotyped, that aren't being oppressed by the cops, need to start being concerned because you're all paying for this shit.
Once again, it's the people
probably
result here. It's the. Because police cannot be indicted, and there's articles on the Anti-Media about that, why a police officer cannot be indicted. Because of that, it goes to civil case every single time. And who pays for that? We do.
Yeah, and even if it was a lawsuit against the police department and it wasn't a civil case, well, who the hell finances the police department?
Right.
We do. Who pays the city government? The city gets sued?
Well, they get acquitted.
You pay the city taxes. So you're paying this shit. You're paying for these cops. They're committing acts of violence. Then you're paying the price for them committing acts of violence. Where's the accountability there?
Are you watching these videos, people, or listeners? Are you watching these videos? Are you seeing these videos? Are you keeping track of what's going on? The police, they've been out of control for a while. Now we're finally seeing it. You know, are your illusions shattered? I hope so.
And don't forget the Border Patrol, Jake.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue. And yeah, I mean, please shed more light on that because it's just as egregious, if not more.
Those are the guys that had me hemmed up at the checkpoint, man. They treated me like shit. They violated my rights. I refused this. Oh, I didn't even finish my story. I refused to get searched. They brought a canine unit out and they went around the outside of my car while I was in it. and then they lied and said, oh, the dog said they smell something in your car. And I was looking in the mirrors the whole time. I seen the dog. The dog didn't signal anything. The dog just kept barking. The dog was barking as they walked the dog up from, you know, from the holding pen where they kept the dog. It was barking the entire time. The dog walked around, didn't make any signals. He just kept barking. And they, oh, get out of your car, bro. The dog says there's something in there. What am I going to do? Can I actually say, oh, pull up the surveillance video. Let me make sure that the dog actually signals. No, dude, they're going to beat your ass if you do that. Yeah. Just like they did with Sandra Bland, dude. Like, that's the thing, man. Like, it's not enough just to know your rights, dude. We've got to make it unacceptable for these cops to do this shit. Because just knowing your rights could put you into harm's way. Because if you do assert your rights and you're dealing with the wrong cop and he takes offense to you trying to, you know, tell him like that you know what's going on, then that'll put you in a situation that Sandra Bland found herself in, where the cop took offense to it and then he retaliated. You know what I mean? And the same exact thing happened to me, and I know it firsthand, dude. And so that's why we got to be careful. Knowing your rights isn't enough, dude. We have to make it societally unacceptable for cops to be acting in this manner.
And don't flex them there. Flex them in court. I mean, just play along. Go to court, and if they even show up, fucking shred them. I mean, if you ever beat a cop in court, it makes them look like a complete ass.
Point, man. And Manny, to your point, one of the private prison contractors, Geo Group, I believe, one of their specialties is immigrant detention centers.
Ooh,
you know, man. So all this stuff is interconnected.
Okay,
that's FEMA camps, right, Jake? What do you think?
I don't know.
Yeah, because they're all built really right, concentrated around there. There's a bit up here, but they're mostly in the southern states when you really look at it.
Well, the federal government is, you know, it's very, very open that they're openly preparing for civil unrest on many different levels. They
expect a flood coming from the south, though, I think.
Yeah.
So in 2014, in New York alone, they doled out $165 million in police misconduct lawsuits, and that's for one state. And New York City, the NYPD, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, I think they get sued, it's either 10 times a day or once every 10 minutes, I can't remember which it is, but it's a ridiculous amount, because the NYPD is one of the most fascist police forces on the planet, and they are known for the stop and frisk. They're known for profiling people, and that's part of their job description, man. There's been several whistleblowers that came out of the NYPD that have talked about how they're told to profile Muslims, to profile Latinos, to profile black people, and to target them for stop and frisk and all that kind of stuff.
That's a fantastic video, I gotta show.
And so, the NYPD is horrible, man, and all around the damn country, Ohio is not even immune to it. A guy got gunned down at the UC Cleveland, I think it was, just the other day. And we may have some new information coming out on that in the coming day or two, because we do have some journalists out there in Ohio that are covering this. But, I mean, people are being gunned down by the cops everywhere. Texas, Ohio, Arizona, California, New York. Shit, little tiny states that have like no people living in them, like Idaho and New Mexico and stuff like that. People are being gunned down on a regular basis, dude. And you know, the fact of the matter is, like, people, there's so many people that like to rationalize, well, we have a bunch of people here, we have more people than they have in England, that's why England has less people dying. But if you compare it, like, in a, you know, if you scale it up to the you know, make actual comparisons per capita, no, the U.S. has basically the worst problem in the damn world with police violence and oppression. We've got Obama even admitted the other day, and I applaud him for saying it, even though his act of commuting the sentences of 40-something people was kind of symbolic, at least he went on TV and admitted, yeah, we got the biggest prison population in the world. We got 5% of the population, 25% of the prisoners for the world. And it's a huge problem, man. And like, so we wonder, like, well, you know, the cop apologists like to make excuses, but dude, the people that actually know what's going on, like, are willing to look at the numbers from a more or less unbiased, objective perspective, we can see, no, we have a police state problem in the U.S. It's worse than any country, including China. And China, you know, we all know China's got you know, prison labor and re-education camps and shit. Dude, we're doing shit just as bad as that. Our prison labor, we haven't even touched that.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo, stereo.